You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 29 July. We've got local private sector credit due 8 a.m. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Karen Whitten from Anchor. The Volterra Platinum results, I mean, they were full of floods, low metal prices, demerger costs. So it looked a little bit ugly, but they are backward looking. And then the bigger question is, what's the take of the PGM rally we are seeing? Rob Downs from Absa CIB. The US has passed their Genius Act, future of stable coins for cross-border trade, perhaps particularly in Africa. And then Jacques Conradi, CEO of Peregrine, looking back at the first half and looking forward to where they are seeing opportunity. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, SAA to launch Cape Town Mauritius route by December. National Airline plans to operate 3 flights a week to the island. Business Day, citrus growers plead with Ramaphosa as US tariff D-Day nears. The association fears hundreds of thousands of cartons of the season's fresh produce will go to waste, bringing the industry to its knees. Morning markets. The US was green. The S&P was up 1 point. It would say 0.02%. NASDAQ up 0.4%. East mostly red. Sydney's the exception, up 0.33%. Turkey is down 0.9%. Hong Kong off 0.5%. And Tencent 1.1% lower. Commodities mostly green. Gold futures the exception, $3,371. Brent, $70.07. Platinum, $1,427. Palladium, $1,299. The Rand is $17.90. Bitcoin, $118,300. Top 40 opening call, a green open, 50 points, a little under 0.1% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Karen Whitten from Anchor. Karen, appreciate the early morning. As I was saying there in the intro, the Volterra numbers. I mean, HEPS down 81%, dividend down 79%. There were those floods in February. There was the lower metal prices. There was the demerger costs. Was there anything in the results that perhaps was a surprise to either the good or the bad side?
Morning, Simon. Yeah, it was probably actually a bit worse than we would have thought. I know they put out a trading statement, a production statement a few weeks ago, but definitely a disappointing result to kick off this new era for Volterra Platinum. And there's obviously the three sort of components that go into a PGM miner's share price performance. The first one is the price of the underlying commodity. Mm-hmm. The second is the production numbers. And the third is the cost involved with getting these commodities out the ground and to the buyer. So the first one there, saw the basket price of the PGMs did increase in Rand slightly, 3%. So you'd think it maybe would increase more, but the benefit of higher PGM prices will come through more in the second half of the year. And then the second half is expected to do more of the heavy lifting and contributing to earnings. The second component is the production volumes, and this is where I think they really struggle. This is something they can control, and production was down 12%, largely due to the flooding at Amandelbult, which I guess they can't control. And then the third one is the costs, which obviously is impacted by the negative operating leverage. When a miner loses volumes like this, it increases the cost per ounce. And I think, Simon, an interesting sort of comment that I saw in the sense was that management continues to believe that the current price levels remain below thresholds required to incentivize new production. And I think this does just show that the platinum market will probably remain tight for quite a while. And we've seen inventory reports from the London and Zurich exchanges that show a very tight platinum market still. Something called a lease rate, which is the borrowing rate for platinum, basically, from these exchanges is at the highest it's pretty much ever been and does indicate how tight this market is.
And that kind of indicates, I mean, we've seen the prices. They've done quite well over the last couple of months. They have held those levels. I mean, we've seen breaks before and then it kind of drifts back. But if we can sort of keep the PGM prices, not we, but if they stay around current levels, perhaps even a little higher, is this a sector that you and your colleagues are interested in?
Simon, I think I must be honest. When we hold PGM miners for clients, it's normally one where we are generally quite close to the door, given how quickly PGM pricing and conditions in the sector can change. I think we've just been burned quite a lot in the past. But with that said, we are overweight platinum at the moment. Mm-hmm. The macro setup is definitely in place for a late cycle melt up, if we're thinking of business cycles. And in general, this should be very positive for the commodity basket. And positive for South Africa, which is why the All Share Index went through 100,000 last week. And I mean, I was on your chatting Volterra 2 months ago, and we were saying that we were actually staying out of platinum because we felt there were sufficient headwinds against the PGMs and the miners. But this has now turned very quickly, Simon. Since then, all these PGMs are up over 20%, some of them as high as 50% in the past 2 months. Volterra being the laggard there. We are now just questioning whether this is like a gold-like sort of rally that we've seen from gold in the past few years. Mm-hmm. And it really is tough to say. I personally don't know how sustainable the rally is, but there are a lot of bullish reports around, especially the faltering EV sort of take-up and how hybrids are seeming to be maybe... sort of people are thinking hybrids are going to be more prominent than actual EVs. And obviously hybrids require more catalytic converters than internal combustion engine vehicles and hybrids. And we do think that the regulatory environment is actually favorable to increased PGM loadings in these hybrids, especially in places like Europe and China. So Simon, I think that would lead me to say remain invested. But like I said, we are always close to the door in case the narrative changes.
Yeah, and I think that is the key point. Stand close to the door with all miners. But yes, close to the door is where to stay. I take your point on that. Kieran Whitten, Anchor, always appreciate the early morning. That's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Are you bullish PGMs? I mean, Kieran says yes, but he makes a point. I reiterate it again. Stand close to that door because things can turn on a dime. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give your money the return it wants without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Rob Downs, head of digital assets at Absa CIB. Rob, appreciate the time. Stablecoins, I suppose let's start off with the first simple question. What is a stablecoin?
Yeah, Simon, thanks for having me. Stablecoins really are a digital token that represent an underlying asset. A cryptocurrency like Bitcoin actually has no underlying value. The value is derived from sentiment and supply and demand market forces, whereas a stablecoin is pegged to the value of the underlying asset. So by far the majority of stablecoins in the world today are US dollar-backed stablecoins. Mm-hmm. There are other forms of stablecoins backed by a euro or backed by gold, that the biggest ones are dollar-backed. And the reason, I guess, they were created, and they go back 8, 9, 10 years, and the reason they're called a stablecoin is they were designed to remove some of the fluctuality and the wild volatility that you were seeing with traditional cryptocurrencies probably 7 or 8 years ago.
And with the passing of the Genius Act in the US recently, I mean, this really does, it brings a regulatory oversight to them, which will benefit, we're outside the US, there's still that benefit to it in terms of the assets that they're holding and oversight, which really does propel them forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, you know, the US regulation and the law passing on the Genius Bill is really important. I think Europe has had some rules for a while with MiCA, largely around stablecoins. Mm-hmm. And what the Genius Bill also does, it just helps create a lot more legitimacy for US dollar stablecoins. And I think what we're likely to see is it's going to continue to fuel the growth of stablecoins in the future.
And some of that growth, I mean, there are real-world practical examples, particularly in a recent note, you were, you know, treasury departments across Africa. I mean, there is real use for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think the growth, probably over the last 4 or 5, 6 years, has come, a lot of it actually has come from emerging markets. And a lot of that growth in US dollar stable coins has come from consumers. So consumers in markets where they've got high inflation, they've got devaluation of local currency. People have moved to want to convert their local currency to a dollar-backed stablecoin because they see the dollar as more secure. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing as well now is that growth in the business-to-business flow. Consumers, and we're seeing it as ads, we're seeing this, our clients are talking to us about this. Their suppliers, you know, supply chain wanting to pay and be paid in stablecoins.
Yeah.
And then with the treasury departments as well, I mean, a huge benefit of stablecoins is the blockchain is a 24/7, 365 days a year operation. Mm-hmm. So treasuries, treasury departments, they can move money near real time globally. So less reliance, I guess, on the 8-hour, 9-hour a day windows of traditional banking and markets globally and the time zone differences. And treasurers have a real opportunity to improve their working capital using stablecoins. There's less need for forecasting because mm-hmm. they can move money where they need it, when they need it, pretty much in real time using some of the stablecoin and blockchain rails.
Absolutely. That real time is the attraction. It's also, I mean, the whole process is easy. And to the point that you made, it removes, particularly in some markets, it's not just currency volatility, it's an ability to get, for example, US dollars, which suppliers might need to be paid in.
Yeah, I mean, access to dollars, especially in our markets in Africa, can be a challenge. And it removes some of that need to find the kind of hard currency liquidity because treasurers, businesses can move into the digital realm and use dollar-backed stablecoins.
The other point that you made, this is not a suggestion that African treasuries kind of, you know, move into crypto and stablecoins 100%. It's a kind of use it when it's going to fit. And there are just going to be a lot of use cases and we'll see the adoption grow in time.
I think that's right. I think what is really important for treasurers to start considering is, you know, what are their clients looking at? What are their suppliers looking at? How can it help with their working capital? But I think a sensible thing for treasurers to start doing is to educate themselves, obviously, and their teams on stablecoins and what it means and how they work and how they operate, mm-hmm. but also make sure that they are talking to their executives, their boards, to help raise that awareness. I think the awareness is growing, and I think what's happened in the US with the Genius Bill has created a lot more awareness, but we're definitely seeing it grow quite significantly in Africa too.
Is there a space for, and I'm thinking Ethereum, where you can program into the blockchain, is there a space for programmable stablecoins almost?
Yeah, I mean, one of the big benefits is the programmable nature. So using technology solutions called smart contracts, mm-hmm. payments can be automated, distribution of funds can be automated for trigger events. So when the supplies are received at a warehouse or a dock, that can be a trigger event to automatically send the payment out. So the programmable nature allows treasurers to also have a lot more control on the flow of funds.
Yeah. And I can see, I mean, we can get so far, as I imagine, when the GPS triggers that boat arriving, the payment can then go off and pay. We'll leave it there. That's Rob Downs, Head of Digital Assets, Absa CIB. Appreciate the time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Jacques Conradi, CEO, Peregrine Capital. Jacques, appreciate the early morning. In your latest letter, you're talking around the sort of first half of the year. You've been in the market a day or 12. I mean, does this stand out as perhaps one of the more tumultuous periods in markets over the last couple of decades? And maybe not standing up quite to the 07, 08, but 08, 09. It was pretty wild for periods there back in April.
Morning, Simon. It was indeed, hey? It was really a standout period. And I guess my gut is this is what we should expect with Trump's second presidency. I think the first one, we know was wild and the tweets caused moves, but now he's both still like that and he actually knows how to implement things because he's figured out Washington. So I think it's going to lead to a particularly exciting period of markets over the next 3 or 4 years. I'm unsure whether it's always good for the world, but certainly it is great for volatility. I think it's great for a portfolio management team that can move fast. And I think, to be fair, on this trade outcome, I think it caused some long-term damage to some trading relationships and some partnerships with Europe and other countries. But at least the outcome signed so far, you have to say, is really good for the US, probably, what came about in the end.
Yeah, 15% in Europe. I can't see anyone happy with that except for America. You mentioned opportunity, and it's one of the points that you make, is that, you know, during that sell-off, you were able to start building a position in Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company. I mean, they are the preeminent, by a long way, chip manufacturer in the digital world, and those sort of sell-offs, that volatility, which might be a continued feature of the second Trump presidency, that is opportunity for you if you're knowing what you like and are nimble enough to react.
I very much agree. I mean, unfortunately, TSMC and NVIDIA, actually, we were just late on in the start of the AI cycle. We caught a lot of the software beneficiaries, but we were too late on that. And then I think one of the things we've learned in our process is when we're a little bit late on something, let's do the work, let's get ready, and let's watch for a pullback. So these things have been on our radar screen for like the last kind of 6 or so months, and we just thought valuations were too high, both NVIDIA and TSMC. And then I think if you have a prepared mind and you have your watch list of shares ready with their targets, I think often these sell-offs are the best thing the market can throw at you, provided that you are in the right frame of mind. And I think it's so important for us as a team and as a hedge fund, both for clients and ourselves, if you can hedge the downside, you are just on the front foot and then you want to buy stuff when they're cheap. If you're overexposed, you didn't hedge, obviously then you're panicking with everyone else and that's why the market's low. So if you can try to make sure that you somewhat see things coming or you're prepared, then I think being in the right state of mind in those panic times is such a huge competitive advantage.
It's an interesting point because you mentioned that you were all in early on the 3rd of April. The 2nd of April, of course, was Liberation Day. You all came in early on that day and you hedged the portfolio. The obvious one is that gives you some downside protection. But I like that point that you're making there. It also just kind of clears the head. It makes it, frankly, less scary.
Yeah, I think this game is as much mental as it is quantitative. So you've got to do the work. But, I mean, markets are a wild ride at times, especially, like you said, the last 6 months. And if you can keep your heads when others are uncertain or unsure, I just think it's a big advantage. So just kind of paying some premium away for that mental clarity at the time when you need it most, I think is vital.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to look at hedging. You talk around AI in your latest letter to fund holders. And you talk around artificial intelligence and your increasing optimism around it, new revenue opportunities for companies. It really is. I mean, we are in very early days. A phrase I heard over the weekend, AI is the worst it'll ever be today. It'll be better tomorrow. We've got ChatGPT 5.0 coming soon. This really is a fundamental changer. And in many senses, I mean, you talk new revenue opportunities. It's hard to imagine what half of them are even going to be when we chat in a year or three or five.
I'm 100% with you, Simon. I mean, one of the points I've made to the team and even to friends and family is, if you look at the entire 200,000 years of our history as a species as Homo sapiens, I would argue that it is the most exciting point to be alive right now as we speak, because we might see a new higher level of intelligence emerge and what that potentially will bring for the world in how we will live our lives in 10 or 20 years, the new technologies that will be possible. I think it's just an extremely exciting time to firstly be alive and then to be an investor, to figure out which companies do we own to benefit from this. I think we've got a nice portfolio of them right now in these global tech companies that provide the infrastructure, but that also, I mean, Meta will be better able to target ads. And at the same time, they'll be able to probably in time reduce costs because the AI will write off your code, but there will be new exciting things that emerge. And things like education, healthcare are things I'm particularly excited about. So I think we're going to have to keep our eyes open. There's just going to be so many opportunities.
Yeah, and it makes that, I mean, the CapEx spend seems crazy at this point, but the revenue is going to, in many cases, to be clear, there might be some misspends, but revenue is probably going to get there. To quickly bring it back home for a last question, you mentioned GDP. Really, we're stuck at that 1%. And yet there are opportunities to find companies where management can really execute in this market. And we do have some excellent management teams, as witnessed by their ability to grow profits in frankly a zero growth economy.
I'm very much with you there. I mean, we always say, what is the economic outlook? But then what is the multiples on shares or what is the price you're paying? And you've got to compare those two. And right now, as you said, that the outlook is not great. The outlook's for 1% GDP growth. But you are getting compensated in that the price you're paying for a lot of these high-quality domestic SA names are not high at all. It's kind of low by historic standards. If you look at the retail sector, currently you can get the best food retailer, ShopRite, and probably the biggest and one of the best clothing retailers, Pep. You can get them for very reasonable multiples, and they're both growing at very nice rates. So I think at least one of the offsetting factors to the weak growth is there is low multiples in the market right now, and there's really these teams, let's say something like ShopRite, that's just executing incredibly, continues to take market share, makes all of our lives better through these amazing 60-60 offerings and just how good that is. So there are enough winners, and that's the reason why we still have a fairly meaningful part of the portfolio in SA, is because we can find company-specific bottom-up kind of opportunities, I don't think it's one where you can just buy the whole domestic SA market.
Yeah, 100%. There are some standout winners there, and the valuations are deeply attractive. We'll leave it there. Jacques Conradie, CEO of Peregrine Capital. Always appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. I was chatting with Viv Govender from Rand Swiss yesterday, talking Netflix results, prospects, valuations. He's not very bullish on it. We asked you if you like this streaming stock. You were saying nope. Over half of you said you were worried about the future. A quarter said maybe, but at better prices. The rest said yes, a great stock. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website, the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Tokenized offshore stocks.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.